Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to announce a crossover. Theosophia Esoteric Studies is crossing over with the Urantia book, and our topic is going to be angelology. And we have, of course, Nick Curto, and we have as a special guest, Diana Montford. Greetings and welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Great to be here, Hercules. Thank you so much for a great intro. Looking very much forward to a special show on angels.
Fantastic. I hear that both of you have something prepared that you wanted to talk about, so I'll take the back seat here for a while, but I will jump in with questions.
Oh, please do. Okay, well, here we go then with tonight's show. To all of our listeners out there on Blog Talk Radio worldwide, a very, very warm welcome to you all. This is the Urantia Book with Nick Curto and my very special guest, Diana Montford. And looking forward to this particular 60 Minutes. It's live. And I first heard of the Urantia Book after I had attended every Sunday morning the All Souls Unitarian Church located on Manhattan's Upper East Side on Lexington Avenue and 80th Street. I've been here for a solid 2 years. And the minister that particular Sunday morning for the very last reading of the service said that he's going to read a few paragraphs from a book titled The Urantia Book. And it very deeply resonated to me, and that is a huge understatement. When I was listening to the minister's words from the Urantia Book, I felt like I had been hit with a spiritual truck. It was so amazing, cutting edge, wonderfully written. Every word of it I was hanging on. Very powerful, a game-changing moment for me, as I'm sure that goes for a lot of people when they first hear about the book and start reading it. I wanted to find out much more about the book, and so I was thinking to myself all through it, remember that very funny title, Urantia, U-R-A-N-T-I-A. I remember repeating that all the way home so that I could write that word down and then do some research and see what exactly the Urantia Book was all about. It just struck me so wonderfully and very powerfully. Long story short, I found a Urantia Book study group in the Manhattan Soho area hosted by now my very, very dear friends, Robin and Helene Jorgensen. And that group was huge. And every Tuesday night, we would meet and read from the book and then ask questions and get answers to the various questions about the book we were reading. That was a wonderful experience for so many years. I'm so grateful to Robin and Helene for being that wonderful study group. Now, I am a member now of another study group that meets also Tuesday nights from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, and it's hosted by Carol Cannon. Carol Cannon is a very close friend of mine. She knows the Urantia Book inside and out, and she has the gift of explaining concepts from the book better than almost anyone I've ever experienced. So I asked Carol if I should mention her study group, and she said, sure. So I'm saying that if you'd like to find out more about her Zoom, a study group, no matter where you live, you can contact me, and I'm going to give you my email address right now. So if you get a pen and a piece of paper. Okay, here goes. My email address is nicknyny1. And that's the numeral 1 at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. The text is, again, it's a masterwork. It unites religion, spirituality, science, philosophy, and the entire life of Jesus. And it's layered. There's never been more detailed on his life than this book. It's in the fourth and final section of the Urantia Book. And a lot of people who are Christian will read that section first And that will do it. Once they read that section, they will then want to read the entire book. So just wanted to mention that. It's a big book, too. It's 2,098 pages thick. And so don't let that worry you. Just take it a little bit at a time. I'm also a longtime member of the Urantia Society of Greater New York, and that's made up of Urantia book readers from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and now other regions all over the United States and beyond, because they have their meeting now on Zoom so that everybody can participate in that. Again, the society is amazing. They do a worship service first for the meetings, and then they have one person selected to present a paper on a very interesting aspect of the Urantia book. And that meeting, the Zoom meeting, goes on every 2 or 3 months throughout the year. Highly recommend that you check that out. And again, if you'd like to know more about that, you can just email me again, and I will give you that kind of information. Okay, so with that said, we have an exciting and truly, I think, wonderful topic tonight with Diana, which is the whole subject of angels. And Diana, I know this is a very special subject for you, too. Do you want to comment on the general subject of angels?
Well, the word angel means messenger. There are those who say that angels may be extraterrestrials. There are those who say that they are from the realm of the gods or God. There are those who say that, Hercules would like this, that many of the angels that so-called Christian folks see are actually the same entities who embodied the gods of ancient Greece, ancient Rome, ancient Egypt, that these are supernatural entities who are here to help us as far as they're able to without impinging on our free will. So, yeah, I think that angels are an amazing thing, and supposedly we all have at least one guardian angel, and one can but hope. Interestingly, the actress Audrey Hepburn always kept a statue of an angel on her makeup table in her dressing rooms. And when asked why, she said, "How do you think I survived World War II? Someone was looking out for me." So that's very interesting, you know? Yeah.
Well, it certainly is. Certainly is. And even as a small child, I was raised Roman Catholic, and one of my favorite aunts, was a nun in the Catholic Church, and she ended up being assistant superior for most of her very long life as that profession. And I always thought of her as a bit of an angel, too. She had angel qualities. And my mom, very early on when I was a child, said, "Nick, you have a guardian angel, and again, to look over you and to help you." And the Urantia book kind of confirmed that. Yes, indeed. Angels not only do exist, but they get very personal as far as your own life is concerned. And I have had a few experiences in my life where I felt as though an angel was there, either guiding me or perhaps giving me a little, what shall I say, encouragement to do the right thing. Diana, does that ring any bell for you?
Well, naturally, I think we've all had feelings of being somehow protected in times of difficulty. I think, my own grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was a former Catholic priest who left the priesthood because he felt he could do more good outside of it, and he did. He was known as the father of the poor, and he was one of the founders of the Spanish Republic in 1931. And he passed a lot of laws as a member of Spanish Parliament that helped people, that helped everyone to get a place at the table. So there are a lot of ways to be a secular angel or to be, in a sense, possessed by angels and channel goodness into the world And you don't have to be, say, a Mother Superior or something. You can be just as effective helping people as a former priest or as an atheist, so long as you do good for others, I think.
Yeah, absolutely true. And, you know, there's a couple of life experiences I wanted to share with our listeners tonight. One of them is when I was fairly small, I guess around maybe 8 or 9, something like that, we had gone to Cape Cod. I'm from Springfield, Massachusetts, so Cape Cod was a place where we might go on vacation. And there was this, right where the beach was, there was this stone wall, very long wall. And I remember getting up on the wall, which is only a couple of feet off the ground, and as children do, and then started walking on it. And it was going a little uphill as I walked. I was by myself. My parents weren't around, nor were any of my friends. And as I was walking, I didn't realize that as I walked up this little stone wall, that the land around it is starting to go down further and further. Again, when I got on it, it was only a couple of feet high from the ground. But as I was going, I didn't realize as I went higher up, the ground was going further down, and the wall was getting bigger, taller as they went. And finally, I got near the top of it, and then I looked down and realized I was a couple of stories above the ground. I could see the ocean on one side, and I thought, how in the world did I get into this? This is dangerous. And at that point, here it comes, I lost my balance. I did. I lost my balance completely, and I was falling backwards towards the ocean side of the wall. And it was just this moment of total fear. How am I going to right myself up? And I was at the point now that I really couldn't do that. And I felt a wonderful force. It was a force, gentle, but it was a pushing of my shoulders back so that I ended up in the middle again of the wall, the path. And this was very real. I wouldn't have been able to do it myself. There was some force that was saving me. Absolutely was. And I just didn't know what to do except to very carefully walk back down that wall until I got to, again, the ground. And I was, I think, a little bit shaken from that experience. And I'm thinking, well, wait a second. What was that force that was forcing me back into balance? And I am here telling you that I believe it was my guardian angel helping me to survive. Diana, have you ever had any feeling or a time in your life when there was an angel guide to help you in some way?
Of course, all the time. There are stories. Now, this has never happened to me, but I've certainly read accounts of, okay, someone about to crash and a hand appears out of nowhere and gives the steering wheel a furious turn and saves that person. I mean, we've all experienced angels in one way or another. I can't think of any specific instance where I have, but maybe our entire lives are protected by angels. We are surrounded in a kind of angelic embrace if we accept it. I think where people run into trouble is to ignore their intuition, ignore the small, still voice inside themselves. And, okay, the Titanic. Some people got a feeling, I do not want to go on this ship. Now, this was crazy. It was absolutely insane. This is the biggest ship on Earth. You're lucky to have a ticket in whatever class of the ship you're on. You're lucky to have a job on that ship if you're a seaman or a steward or a stewardess. Well, some people, there's a famous story about an Irishman who set out, he'd got a job on the Titanic. His mother said, oh, please don't go. I have this awful feeling. Please. And he said, oh, come on. Please, it's the Titanic. Don't be silly. So he went, and as he was walking along to get on the train to go to the Titanic, he got such a strong feeling of don't do this that he actually went back home, and everyone said, what are you doing here? And he said, you know, I got the same feeling my mother got. I'm not going on the Titanic, and you know what happened, you know? And there was another story about crewmen on the Titanic whose buggy was blocked by a train crossing the tracks, and they missed the boat, literally, and they survived, obviously.
Amazing stories. Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure there's more of those, too. And, you know, you were touching something, too. You, I believe you said the word angelic embrace. Was that your phrase you used?
Yes, it was.
I love that. I love that phrase, angelic embrace, and that really speaks of love and concern. And that's what angels are. And another interesting part of the Arantia book, when it's describing angels, and this is something that really I sat up in my chair when I read it for the first time. It said that angelic beings, known as angels, their wings are really friction shields that help them survive the stress of moving, especially in space or other areas where there's a lot of stress. Do you remember reading that, coming across that in the book?
Well, I think many things in the Urantia book and in all spiritual works are metaphorical. I think perhaps angels are a form of energy, and we living on Earth have to make them seem like human beings with wings. But I don't think, to my way of thinking, I don't think they are, you know, beings with wings. I think they might be entities, yes, but on a completely spiritual level and not concerned with, you know, friction from the wind or something. I think also that we seem to be moving toward a more spiritual world. I know how strange that sounds, given all these mass shootings and murders and God knows what else, and drug taking and death by fentanyl and all that stuff. But I really think that these are growing pains, and that we are heading in a much more positive, much more spiritual direction, much more close to nature, much more close to ourselves, our souls. And I think that as we try to grow more spiritual, we will be much more cognizant of divine intervention, part of that divine intervention being what we would term angels. What do you think?
I agree with what you just said. I think that we are moving in the right direction, and I do think that there is more feeling of spirituality among all peoples of this planet. I think that's a trend. Not necessarily organized religions. There is some of that, but I think the bigger trend is for spirituality. More so than organized religions. And I think that goes for just about every civilization there is right now. And I think that's a good...
Yeah. I think many people are seeing organized religion as a kind of cage, as a very limiting thing. I think to a degree it was right when people had a very limited outlook. Most people were serfs years ago, and they had to imagine a kind of hierarchy and strict rules. You may do this, you may not do that. But I think that many young people today have not been reared with religion, yet they feel a spiritual quickening and awakening. And I think that's innate in the human soul, to know that it's not alone, that there is something there. They don't know what might be there, but they know there's something. They feel something. And, there's that World War II phrase, God is my co-pilot. Well, yeah, you know?
Yes, absolutely true. And I think that the youth of today I really feel as though they've got more challenges right now than we did when we were growing up. I think there's more things going on right now.
Well, speak for yourself. I was trans in a very anti-trans time, and I'm not so sure about that. I think maybe societally they have more challenges in the sense that most of them have more challenges, certainly economic challenges, climate change, all that. But I think that you as a gay man and me as a trans woman, we may have had greater personal challenges 50-something years ago than young people in our situations, our respective situations, would have today. What do you think?
Right. Well, I think on that level you are correct. And there's a lot of others. The world right now is very turbulent, never more so than right now. We have more both nuclear and atomic rattling of weaponry, weaponry that certainly would absolutely flatten different sections of our planet, and we have that more so than now than ever. And I
no,
think that,
I disagree. That's not more so than ever at all. Remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? We're both old enough to remember that. Remember duck and cover. Remember the social and cultural upheavals of the late 1960s. Before our time, the Depression, World Wars One and Two, and before that, all sorts of the Civil War. So, no, I think the world is always in a state of crisis and in a state of flux, and I think that we're here to learn from these things. So, no, I don't think the world is worse off than it's ever been. I mean,
well,
people during the Civil War did not have microwaves, you know.
As far as the youth go, studies have shown that there's more suicide of younger people worldwide than ever before. That is a horrible statistic. And
well, that's because they were reared without any kind of religion or God. And as you know, we both grew up Catholic. We both heard suicide is a sin. And in the New Age religion, which we both embraced now, suicide is a sin and you have to come back and do it all over again. But I think young people reared with no religion, no sense of responsibility to the universe, feel that the universe has let them down, and screw the universe, I'm not taking this, and they kill themselves.
Well, there's truth in what you said, and again, it's so sad when a younger person has given up hope and sees the only thing that they can do is to end it, and that is so sad. I know of a wonderful family, very close to me, and their oldest son committed suicide, and they were totally blindsided by that. He never let on how very disturbed and depressed he was, and it was a blow to that family. I think that right to this day, 20 years later, they still are coping with such a loss and such a shock, and so. As far as the Urantia book goes, I got about a year ago a grant, a major grant, that was given to me, awarded to me, to do an outreach by either radio or television or social media and to publicize the Urantia book.
Well, may I ask who gave you the grant?
It was the fellowship. The fellowship, I'll give you the website. I thought I could give it to you now. It's an amazing website. It's got not only the Urantia book to read for free, but you can also listen to the entire Urantia book, beautifully read by very good readers, also on that same website. And the exciting thing is that since it's worldwide with the internet, they've now recorded the entire Urantia book in 28 world languages. That's an incredible accomplishment to do that, and they've succeeded, and they're working on a few more. The fellowship is working on a few more right now, so that no matter where you live in the world, the Urantia book is available to you. Let me just do that right now. We're talking about it. It is www.urantia.com. book.org. Going to repeat it. URANTIABOOK.org. I highly recommend it. And there's also a second website that I'd also like to recommend. And this was put together by Barry Clark, who's a member of the Urantia Society of Greater New York. Let me give you that one also. That's excellent. And here it is, URANTIA.NYC. That's very simple. Both of those are beautifully designed, have a huge amount of information about the Urantia book as well as the book itself. And highly recommend both of those. And I hope that our listeners at some point will visit both of those sites and see what they can find and also start to read or listen to the book. I know that for me and many others, I read page one of the Urantia book, and it was, oh, boy, this is special. This is a masterwork. I felt that instantly from page one, and it certainly proved to be exactly that. It is the most loving, limitless love book I have ever read, and the instructions, the information, cutting-edge information on all these various categories is eye-opening. And some people have said, you know, Nick, it's like potato chips. Once you read page one, you want to go read them all. And a lot of people have said that, and it's true.
Yes, but the Urantia book admits, it actually admits that not all the information is accurate, because we're not supposed to have all the information. And I believe it was actually written by the founder of the Seventh-day Adventists. Was her name Ellen White?
Some people have said that. Others would disagree, and of course that's up to their own interpretation. But the bottom line is just judge the book by what it's saying. That's how to do it. And I think that will prove the point that this is such a special gift to everyone. And it was published in 1955, and it was realized in the 20s and 30s, but most of it was realized by that. Diana, do you want to talk to the readers about how the Urantia book came to be, your understanding of that?
Well, I don't know. I think that would be your department, wouldn't it? You know more about it than I do.
Well, okay. Well, the quick story of that, and there's more to this, but the quick story is that a man by the name of Dr. William Sadler, who lived with his wife in a beautiful, it's a small mansion right in Chicago itself.
Wasn't the wife the heiress to the Kellogg cornflake fortune and sanitarium fortune?
His wife, that's a good question. I don't know. I know the Kellogg.
I think she was, actually, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, again, I didn't know that. But he had what they called a soiree on Sundays. And what that was, the soiree, was really a gathering of their favorite friends and associates. And they were doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, if you will, various businesses, just casual friends from their organizations. And they all gathered in their living room, and they would just talk about what was going on that particular week. And this was an ongoing project, and it was known that he had that. It was known that Dr. William Sadler would be a champion of truth when it came to people who would say that they would get the relatives that had died and for a very large amount of money would have a seance. And unfortunately, some of these people were totally fraudulent. And Dr. William Sadler was known for exposing them if they were fraudulent. One quick example is that he was in the theater, and there was someone who was saying that he could make things fly and all that. And there was this table that went right past the audience. It was a table that went right over the heads of the audience. Well, Dr. Sadler could see through that and jump in the air and saw the wire and pulled the whole thing down. I hope anyone was hurt, but as look at this, he's fraudulent. This wasn't just levitation. This was wires. So anyhow, generally people knew about the fact that he was a champion of truth. And a woman who was very disturbed about what her husband was doing when he went into a trance-like state, and she found Dr. Sadler and contacted him.
Well, what was her husband doing?
Well, what was going on was when the husband, it looked like he was sleeping, but she couldn't wake him up. And then he started talking, and he was talking about subjects in detail that he never knew about. He had no instruction, no teaching.
Very
of
much
those
like
subjects.
Edgar Cayce, in a sense, yes.
There was a parallel, you're right. And so, but she was very disturbed because when he was under this, he would be not muttering, he was saying this very clearly, all these amazing things, and she could not wake him up until he did it himself. So
was she a fundamentalist Christian? Is that why she was upset?
You don't know. But she contacted Dr. Sadler and just told him what I just said. And he said, okay, where do you live? I will investigate this. So he did. And I believe he brought a stenographer at one point with him. And sure enough, the man went under, and he started talking about incredible subjects in detail. So they were recording this. And when he finally, after hours, woke up on his own, he would say, well, what's for supper? And they said, well, all the things you were saying. He said, I don't think I said anything. And they said, well, you were talking for over 2 hours, and you've given us incredible information about physics, about history that we never heard before. And he said, no, I don't understand that. We'll forget it. He had no interest in what he was saying underneath this trance-like state.
Was he the man who channeled the Urantia book?
That's where I'm going with this. So Sadler asked the woman, can I come back? Can we come back? Because this is really interesting. I've never come across anything like this. And so that began years of going back and forth and writing down what the men were saying. And just to go back for a second to the soiree, at one point Dr. Sadler said to his friends, I need to tell you something that I'm investigating and have been doing it for a while now, but I need you to be absolutely secret about this. You're not to tell anyone at all. Would you please agree to do that? And everybody in the room said, you've got a word of honor. We will not say a word. And then he told these people what was going on and then gave them a printed copy of what the sleeping subject, that's what they called him, what was saying in this trance-like state. So they all took it home and read it and went back and said, you know, this is extraordinary. And, you know, from that transcript, we have a few questions regarding what the man was saying. So Dr. Sadler said, write your questions down. He brought that to the next episode of the man going under into this trance-like state. And the man, through the man, the answers were verbalized again to the sleeping subject. So it was recorded down, and then he brought those answers to the forum. They said, yes, this is the amazing answer to our question. So this was a process that went on for many, many, many years. And you were right to say that the Kellogg's, famous for Kellogg's products, was absolutely floored by what was going on and put some money, and others contributed, to printing the Urantia book. And it was finally published in 1955. And as far as I know,
why did they wait so long?
Well, it's a 2,000-page book, so it took a long time to put that together and put it in a reference of a table of contents and give it some sort of an order. And so the final version was then published and put out. And according to the people who were there, they sent those copies to all the heads of all the major world religions. Isn't that interesting?
That so you said, consider the Urantia book to be divine revelation.
That's what they were saying, that this is the a fifth epical revelation. This is a very, very special and very big deal. And so these other religions were taking a look at this somewhat in secret because, again, this is all cutting edge, brand new from 1955 on. So that's just a very small version of the total story. But the Urantia book came to be and then was put into libraries and sold on bookstores. It still is sold in major bookstores worldwide, and it also was sold online on the two websites that I gave you. And
well, what
so
do you say to those who say that this is a kind of cult and that people who cling to the Urantia book are, in effect, cultists? What would you say to that?
I would just say read the book. Read the book because that will answer that question along with a lot of others. Just read the book itself. Just go ahead and read it for yourself and see what you think. Certainly, it's a lot of people, including me, was just absolutely struck by the layered answers on all these major questions. For instance, are there angels? Are angels real? How do they affect us on this planet? Are angels, is there a heaven? What happens when a person passes on? Is that it, or is there more? Well, the Urantia book answers all of that. It answers questions about guardian angels. It answers questions about what's in the universe besides our own universe. And they call it the master universe, which is vast. And right now, a lot of the scientific community, with the latest technology and telescopes, is saying we are overwhelmed with how huge it is. There doesn't seem to be any limit. But then again, this is 1955 when all this was coming out. Anyhow, it is an extraordinary book. And,
which, in a sense, put its credibility into doubt because even science at that time didn't know what we know now. And that caused problems for the Urantia book and the Urantia Society.
Well, you know,
wouldn't you say?
The good news on that is the Urantia book, to this day, when scientists and physicists are reading this book in those various professions, it's lighting the way. And I've heard this many times that, oh, maybe we should research this thing or this part of it. And they are put on a road of research from the Urantia book where they're discovering amazing, amazing scientific information. Isn't that amazing that it's a launch pad for the human mind, to say we need to do research in this direction? And this is not just an isolated case. It goes on and on. Now, Diana, before it goes on anymore, I want to ask you, because you and I were sharing this amazing story about the astronauts in relationship to angels. And would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I would. In one of those truly bizarre twists of fate, last week I sent away for a book called Catalog of the Unexplained. Last night I went out to do the food shopping, and there it was in the package room in my building. And amazingly, and truly, I mean, talk about synchronicity. It has something about, it's a short paragraph and I can read it. This is from Catalog of the Unexplained by Liana and Belita Greenaway. That's Greenaway, sort of like Dunaway, but only Greenaway. Okay, here we go. Quote, also known as Galactic Angels, in July of 1984, three highly trained Russian cosmonauts, Oleg Atkov, Vladimir Solovyov, and Leonid Kitsin, were above the Earth in the Salyut 7 space station and declared that they came across a gathering of seven 80-foot angels floating outside their craft. The angels were smiling and exuded calm and peace. They kept pace with the spacecraft for 10 minutes and then faded away. 12 days later, three new cosmonauts, Svetlana Savitskaya, Igor Volk, and Vladimir Zani Bekov, say that three times fast, arrived to relieve the crew, and the apparitions reappeared. But this time, all six members of the crew witnessed the event. Upon returning to Earth, all the cosmonauts were tested physically and psychologically and were found to be of sound mind and health. For many years, the Soviet government covered up these events. But after the fall of the Soviet Union, this story came to light. And Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space, claimed he also saw an enormous figure floating in space outside his craft. So, what do you make of that?
I can not only, I make that is an amazing story, and I'm going to tell you that the same thing happened to our United States astronauts when they were in space in a capsule, and they were reported the same thing, and that they also felt as though they were being communicated, not by music or by words, but by thoughts in their head of peace and love. And again, they reported this. This was a very hushed up area here, and you never heard about it on the news, but they had reported it to their officers when they got back that this was outside their ship with the very same description. So here we go again with a parallel of similar stories that are extraordinary.
Didn't one of the astronauts found the discipline of noetics, is it called, whatever it's called?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that, Diana.
Didn't one of the astronauts found the discipline of noetics? I'm not sure if that's the correct term, but it was one of those astronauts, and it's a school of thought. And if you remember, when all the astronauts were going up and down, suddenly the hippies were talking about peace and love. One wonders if it wasn't a message to the entire planet and not just to the astronauts.
Isn't that an interesting idea? Wow, I never heard it phrased that way, but that is certainly a possibility. I mean, here we go. Now, we know for a fact, we do, that our planet has been watched from the very, very beginning. We know that ETs have been on the planet. They have helped different cultures and civilizations, absolutely. They have been under, over, and around our planet. We feel as though they are still doing all of that. And here we go with something that is extraordinary, talking about angels. So,
The ETs are becoming much more obvious as people grow as souls. People are, the old theory was, it will destroy religion. People will go into a panic. Well, they won't, and they don't. And if extraterrestrials had wanted to destroy us, they could have done it at any point in history with a wave of one of their three fingers. So really, we should relax and realize that most, if not all, extraterrestrials are here to help us. You know, the Nordics, for example, are said to be very good with us. Sadly, the reptilians aren't our number one fans, but, well, that's life, right?
I think, this is my personal opinion, that just like on our planet, we have wonderful people and people that are really very, very satanic and very, very horrible. I think the same thing is true with ETs. I think that there are very good, wonderful, loving ETs that have our best interest at heart and have shown that in the past. And I think there are other ETs that are very much the exact opposite of that. And so a friend of mine who is an authority on UFOs and all that has said to me that if you are in a situation where you see a UFO, certainly I have many times, and friends have the same experience, and send them love. Just in your mind, just send them love and good feelings. And if you're getting that back mentally, chances are you're dealing with some very wonderful, friendly ETs. But if you're sending that up and you're not getting any of that back, but in fact, troublesome and almost evil thoughts, get out of there. Stay away from them. Just get out of there real fast, because these are not ETs you want to deal with at all. And I think that's very, very simple.
Some ETs are nourished by war, by strife, by worry, by fear, and some are not. And there, I've read that World War II was, in effect, a war between two rival groups of ETs, and, well, you know what happened. So, of course, there are good and bad entities everywhere. But I think, well, the writer Jim Mars wrote that some ETs view us as a kind of zoo or ant farm. We are just something they seeded and created, and we are something to amuse them, whereas others see us as developing beings with the ability to grow and to accept new things as we intuit those new things, thanks to the telepathy given to us by the ETs, the telepathic messages.
Yes, and also there is a parallel here between ETs that have been watching us and observing us right now and have been for many centuries, and that have our best intentions of helping us in any and every way that they can, and we should ask for that. And there's a parallel there with the guardian angels, too, that we have wonderful beings that are there for us to prosper and grow in love, and they're there. They're there, and we need to reach out to them in whatever way, whatever spirituality you have, whether it be a concentration of a prayer or meditation or whatever else you might use, and that includes music.
If angels are ETs. They might present themselves as angels to allay our fears of ETs, but they might well be ETs. Christ, it's said, could very easily have been a space alien who adopted human form.
Well, you know, the bottom line of that is when you read the life and teachings of Jesus, the fourth section of the Urantia book, and you're so struck with the limitless love that he imparted every moment of his life on behalf of all of us, that alone just stops you in your tracks, and you're so grateful for what he said and did and promised us, and that has to be one of the goals of your life is to emulate the limitless love that Jesus showed to every man, woman, and child throughout his entire life.
Yes, that there were many great spiritual leaders, Buddha, for example, even Mohammed, if you get right down to it, aside from, you know, the Taliban and all that. I mean, there have been many great spiritual leaders, Vishnu, you know, Krishna. It's just that we, having grown up in the Catholic Western tradition, of course, see Jesus as, you know, a great divine being. But I think, wouldn't it be interesting if the same soul just came to different regions and became their quote-unquote Messiah? Jesus is ours. Buddha would be for the Asian folk, and so on and so forth. What do you think about that?
Well, as you're saying this, I have a question, and that is, with all the various spirituality callings and religious groups that there are right now on our planet, do any of the other groups talk about angels?
Yes, in many ways.
Yes.
They talk about sprites. They talk about, guardians. So there are many ways to phrase the concept of angel without using the word angel.
Right. I would suspect that would be true. So, yes, that does make total sense to me, too. It's not just limited to Christian spirituality at all. It can go throughout a lot of other religions and spiritual callings. Hercules, how much more time do we have now? It's going really fast. I feel that
around,
for sure.
We have around 10 minutes. Just to throw in something, every culture has something that fits in with the concept of angel. The words are different. The descriptions are a little bit different. Sometimes the functions are a little bit different. But all in all, there are recognizable angels in almost every belief system.
Now, you're a scholar on the civilization of the Greek, the Greeks. In the Greek concept, do they have a word for angels or a concept for angels in that particular area?
Yes, the word angel comes from the Greek. It means messenger. And,
oh, really?
And any, not just a divine messenger, but any messenger. So if you told Hal something, if I asked you to tell Hal something, and you did, if you deliver the message, you're an angel, because you're a messenger in that case. When you get a package from Amazon, the Amazon delivery man is an angel. And the same goes true for terms like Elohim, which means Lord. The word Lord in English could mean a divine being, or it could mean somebody who's in charge of something. They could be called the Lord as well. And like the word Lord, Elohim also translates into owner, into boss, into husband, into a bunch of related words that go with that. So in antiquity, the angels were not a distinct class of being. The angels were a job. They had a job to do, to deliver messages from the divine or from the king or from, you know, whoever's in authority to other people. And that's what makes them angels.
Well, Mercury can be construed as an angel.
Yes. Mercury is considered an angel. Hecate is considered an angel. Iris is considered an angel. And there are a bunch of others that we have their names, but we don't really know much about what they did. And they were called angels, angeli, messengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. Thank you for that. That doesn't surprise me at all. How wonderful. We're coming up then to the last 8 minutes. Diana, do you have any other particular area that you'd like to talk about angels with the remaining time?
No, I think that we have pretty much covered it as far as we can in a one-hour program. And I think maybe it's time for you to give your contact information and the Urantia Society information. What do you think?
Yeah, I
and
think
I better stop
great.
Saying what do you think, because it's annoying even me. Okay. But
I'm going to give a couple things. First, I'm going to give one more time for those people who didn't have a pen and paper handy. The two Urantia websites that I highly recommend. They are excellent. They're beautifully designed. And they have a lot of information about the Urantia book, including the book itself, which you can read or listen to because it has been recorded. And it has been recorded not only in English, but in 28 world languages. So here we go. The first one is urantiabook.org. That is from the Fellowship. The Fellowship is an organization worldwide that I belong to. It's an amazing organization. I highly recommend that you look into that, and a lot of that information is on that website. Again, urantiabook.org. And the second one is from the New York group and the Urantia Society of Greater New York, and it is a beautiful website also with a lot of other information on it. And that one also is urantia.nyc. They're both amazing websites, huge amount of information. And I'm telling you, that will launch you off on the right path. Absolutely. Many people use this every single day worldwide. Also, if you have a question for either Diana or myself, either a question or a comment, if you'd like to say something to us, you can do that by reaching out to my email address. And if it's for Diana, I'll head it out to her, your comment or your question. Or if it's for me, of course, I'll answer it. And again, my email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. COM. And please do take us up on that. Well, Diana, this has been an amazing, a quick hour. I mean, this goes by so fast.
Well, all your shows are great. I mean, every single one. So.
Oh, you're more than generous. Thank you so much. I really enjoy so much all these years with of course, Hercules as our producer. My goodness, I couldn't ask for anybody better than him. And,
he gives everyone an opportunity. Greatest guy going. Best producer, and he gives everyone an opportunity. He's great, you know.
Thank you.
Very, very recognized. You deserve every bit of that, Hercules, for sure. Anybody who's ever met you or worked with you on various projects can absolutely say that. All right, even with that, again, Diana, what a joy to have you aboard this time. I hope it can be many
more. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, more to come, for sure. And as I said earlier, the Rancher book is now translated into 28 world languages and more on the way, sold in better bookstores worldwide. And they may also either listen to it or read it online. And I'm sure that it will give you an amazing amount of information, and it will change your life for the better. Much love to you all out there. This is the Rancher book with Nick Curto. I want to wish you all an enlightened life journey. Till next time, please explore the deep wisdom, limitless love contained in the Rancher book. Stay safe and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to everyone, all of our listeners out there on this planet and beyond. Till next time, much love to you all. Good night.
And thank you to everybody for tuning in. Tomorrow we will be learning more about angels in the Urantia book, especially the Michael sons and the Christ Michael sons. So look forward to that tomorrow. And Diane and Nick will be back next week on Saturday night discussing some other topic or continuing this one. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
Much love. Much love out there.